Call the meeting to order, please. Could we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters is excused. Vice Mayor Matusik.
Here.
Vice Mayor Nabik.
Here.
Councilman Conroy.
Here.
Commissioner Albert.
Here.
Commissioner McGurk is excused. Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Stowers. Councilmember DiLorenzo is excused. Councilmember Ford. Councilwoman Long.
Here.
Commissioner Revels is excused. Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's is excused. Councilmember Cusack.
Here.
County Chair Davis.
Here.
Councilmember Wagner. Mayor Emmett.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rogers. Councilmember Wheeler. Commissioner Shoup.
Here.
Commissioner Woods.
Here.
Mayor Gibson. Mayor Sal. Councilmember Perrone.
Here.
Linda Costello. Heather Blank.
Here.
Judy Craig.
Here.
Dustin Savage is excused, and we have a quorum. And the voting member for the Small City Alliance is Commissioner Shoup.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess a lot of our members are out at hiding Easter eggs or something today. So you could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Marshall, will you lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have anybody for public participation this morning? Public participation. Hearing none, we'll move on. Members, today we have the consent agenda item, 3 action items, and 5 presentations that I hope will be succinct and to the point. And first item up is the consent agenda, Roman numeral 4. Does anybody wish to pull any item off the consent agenda? Any item to come off the consent agenda item?
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion to pass all the items of the consent agenda is passed. Moving on to Roman numeral 5, our action items. First up is approval of resolution 2016-09, amending the fiscal year 2014-15 and 2015-16 Unified Planning Work Program and authorizing the deobligation of planning and extra urban set-aside funds for current federal fiscal year. And Mr. Seeley, are you going
to
do that?
I'll go ahead and speak to that.
Okay, Lois, you're recognized.
Good morning, everyone. Is that on? This is a process that we go through at the end of each 2-year period when we reach the end of the UPWP. And the reason we go through it is when we have money that we have not spent, there is a delay in the process if we close out the UPWP before that money becomes available again. And so rather than wait the entire fiscal year, we go ahead and do a forecast of what we'll spend based on staff time, based on contracts that we've issued, and we try to estimate leftover funds. In the past, that's always just been restricted to the planning funds, the PL funds. But because of the changes that we've been talking about with our new work program, we've also included the SU funds, or those set-aside funds that are included in fund feasibility studies. And so what we have as a part of this amendment is affecting 4 tasks, releasing PL funds from 2 tasks and SU funds from 1 task. And then we're also adding a small amount, $8,628, to the bicycle and pedestrian feasibility study so that we can go ahead and complete all of the studies that we've prioritized in the past through this board. By doing this, the funding that we have here, the roughly $100,000, will be available on July 1st as we start the next fiscal year this summer. Happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Any questions, members? I'll entertain a motion for approval.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion approved and seconded of the resolution 2016-09 amending the fiscal year 2014-15 and 2015-16 Unified Planning Work Program and authorizing the deobligation of planning and extra urban set-aside funds for the current federal fiscal year. Is there any debate? Any objection to the motion? Any objection? Without objection, show the motion passes. Item B, review and approval of Resolution 2016-10, supporting safe routes to schools, infrastructure project applications.
Mr. Patterson, is your microphone on?
Yes, sir, it is on. I'll loan you my hearing aid.
We could work on getting that turned up. I was questioning whether mine was on as well.
You're recognized there, Lois.
Thank you. The Safe Routes to Schools program was established originally under a transportation authorization bill called Safety Lou, and that was back in 2005. And it was a set-aside program designed for projects that help kids that are walking and riding to school get there safely, making safety improvements, installing sidewalks and crosswalks, those sorts of things. And under MAP 31, which was passed back in 2012, there were some changes, and it wasn't a separate set-aside any longer here in the state. Moving forward into last year with the FAST Act, this program is now once again a set-aside that's going to be funded. And I think it's funded at roughly $7 million a year at the state level. So it's not a huge program, but it does have a separate application process. And so this resolution is providing support for any of the local governments that want to pull a project that is already on our priority list that qualifies for the program, or a project that was identified in the school safety studies that we have done here in Volusia and that we will be doing next year in Flagler. So again, it just provides support from this MPO for projects that we have already identified that qualify. We haven't had any requests, but sometimes those requests come in at the very last minute. And again, I would certainly want for somebody to have our support moving forward in the program if they so choose.
Any questions? Any questions?
Move
approval. Hold on just a second.
No.
Commissioner Matusik, you have a question?
Oh, did you
want
to go first?
No. You ladies first, always.
It said that the applications close on the 31st. Has this been advertised to all the cities? I mean, we're just getting this for approval, and it closes in a week.
Oh, we've been talking about the program, and we've announced it through the TCC, and we've sent out notices in the past.
Has it been mentioned to the BPAC as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and through the BPAC, so yes.
Okay,
yeah,
I was just wondering, definitely. Because it's such a short timeline that it's been working on the other side. Thank you.
Good, Chair Davis.
Ms. Bohnbeck, after the closing of this thing, there really isn't any problem. Like if one of the cities came up and said, hey, we got this program. They could still fall into the program here, right?
They'd have to wait until the call for project cycle next year. And again, this is managed through the Safe Routes to Schools office at the state level. So it is not a TPO program, but again, we would want to provide support for projects that we've identified that could benefit. We've spent certainly a lot of time with the school safety studies that we've identified in the past. We've had almost a dozen projects funded through Safe Routes to Schools when it was a set aside. So, again, it's been successful for us.
Okay. If Ms. Kuzak, I have a feeling you were going to motion, I'd be more than honored to be your second.
Mr. Chair, I move approval.
And I will second.
Okay, we have a motion for approval of the Resolution 2016-10 supporting Safe Routes to Schools infrastructure project applications. Is there any debate? Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes. Item C, review and approval of Resolution 2016-11, amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program, the famous TIP.
That's
deal.
Correct.
Lois?
This TIP amendment is fairly straightforward. It adds four new projects. Two of which are I-95 resurfacing projects. There's one railroad safety project, and then the Holzenbach Road sidewalk, Holzenbach Drive sidewalk, which is coming from our priority list. Local governments continue to work with DOT to try and get other projects from our priority list into the TIP, again, for current year funding. But so far, Holzenbach is the only one that's met all the requirements just yet. It also revises two projects, and these are VOTRAN projects, and it's just clarifying sort of the descriptions and the intent so that it aligns well with VOTRAN CIP, and changes or makes a correction really to funding which had been identified as local funding and is not local funding, but rather state funding. Are there any questions?
Any questions? If that's your phone, please stand up so we can recognize you for... I forgot to tell everybody, turn your cell phones on to stun or stun. Whatever at this point.
Stun. I like that.
Any questions? I'll entertain a motion for approval.
Motion for approval, Novick.
Second, Matusik.
I have a motion for approval. The second of Resolution 2016-11, amending the fiscal year 2015-16, 2019-20 Transportation Improvement Program. Any debate? Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes. We're going to go into our presentation status reports and discussion items. I know Chair Davis is a new member to this group, but if you need to ask a question or something, just please stand it up. It makes it easier with this many people running around here.
Okay.
So this is for the general membership to remember that.
I apologize, Mr. Bradshaw.
If you have a burning question, if not, just wait until the presentations are over and then you can ask your questions. But we'll start up presentation overview of Volusia County's transit development design guidelines and transportation impact analysis. And
I'll go ahead and lead that discussion. Thank you. So these are two documents that we're working on, and we've been working through a subcommittee and briefing the technical committee members who are most specifically involved. And I wanted to have a discussion here today, in part at least for the TIA, the Transportation Impact Analysis Guidelines, because it's fairly technical information. And it's not the type of thing that you all get involved with, but your staff certainly does. And these two documents are really pretty closely linked with each other. They reference each other, and they provide a connection that's important to recognize. And so VOTRAN is really the project managers of the Transit Development and Design Guidelines. This is a document that already exists. It was originally approved back in 2008, and they're updating it. And what it does is it serves as a guide for developers and for local governments to make sure that if they are locating along a transit route or if they are going to have customers that are transit users, that they develop that project in a way that will be supportive. And you'd like to think that that would be an automatic, but it's not. You know, we get buildings designed with overhangs that are too low for a bus to fit under. We get buildings that don't, and parking lots that don't have circulation. And so but they want the bus to come in, and when the bus starts coming in, it's nailing the curb. Or there's no place for people to stand and wait safely. Or no connection to the bus stop on the street. So the design guidelines, and VOTRAN's been working through this. They've been surveying folks and working with local governments to update these. And this just serves as a tool, again, for local governments and for developers to hopefully do a better job. I mentioned the principles that are in this are not really specific to VOTRAN. They could apply to any transit agency. But here in Volusia County, again, they want to provide real some things that might be more specific to county policy. And again, the overall principles, though, are pretty straightforward. The transportation impact analysis is a separate document, and that was originally developed through the MPO before we became the TPO back in 2009. And all new development gets an assessment for their impact to the local transportation system. But prior to this document coming out, every city and the county had a different strategy for doing this. And every single effort had to start with a negotiation. How far out? And what is the historical data we're going to use? And what is the growth projections we're going to use? Well, that was difficult for local governments. That was difficult for developers. If you're putting a 7-Eleven in one city or another city, the general impact of activity generated should be about the same. The growth patterns, whatever. So what we did was we sat down with the Transportation Subcommittee of VCARD, which is County Association for Responsible Development, private sector driven, as well as a lot of the local governments. And we said, can we come up with a format that standardizes this? So at least we start with a basis. And everybody signed on to this back in 2009. It is referenced in a lot of the comp plans for the cities. And again, it provides a standardized starting point for making these assessments, a common database. Well, obviously, over time, since 2009, transit has become more important. And so we've tried to update this document to increase the transit component. Likewise, we've expanded to include more of Palm Coast and Flagler. They have different data sets. They have different processes. So we've sat down with those organizations as well as VOTRAN. We've spent some time with VCARD folks as well as local governments. And we're at a point where we're ready to come back and have you all take a look at those documents. But I just wanted to at least start the conversation so that you knew this was coming, so that you had an opportunity if you wanted to speak with your staff and get their thoughts on how this is moving along. Again, because it is a more technical document, the TIA, when we approve it, becomes a requirement for the governments, local governments, to participate and use that TIA. It also says that if you're assessing a development that's on a border, that you inform your neighbor who will also be impacted. So again, it helps increase coordination, helps create a more stable and standardized format. It doesn't address mitigation. That's still up to each entity to decide how they're going to have the developer address the impacts that they have to the system. We don't get into that. That's local. And it doesn't mean that you can't make changes. Again, if there's something unique about a project and you need to extend the boundaries or you need to do something a little bit differently, you certainly can. But it provides a good common starting point for everybody. And again, I just wanted to start that conversation so that you all had a chance to give this some thought as we start to move it through our meetings. You have a chance to sit with your staff and make sure that you understand it. Because again, once we adopt it, it becomes the methodology that each of your local governments will be using to assess transportation, and the enforcement of that is that if you're not using them, the TPO doesn't prioritize your projects on our priority list. So it does get tied to funding. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. I know you don't have the documents in front of you, but they will be coming for your review. Again, I just wanted to get the general sense out there.
Commissioner Gillian, you're recognized.
Yeah. Lois, where did this originate, these changes that you just described? What was the impetus for this to actually come forward for these revisions?
A combination of things. Obviously, again, time has gone by and we recognize that transit's more important. More than anything, it was the change in our boundaries and the recognition that it doesn't reflect. All of the references are to data in Volusia County, boundaries in Volusia County, and we need to recognize Palm Coast and Flagler as a part of this.
But these changes that are going to be put into place that will jeopardize potential TPO funding for projects, that obviously doesn't have anything to do with boundaries.
Right. Well, but that resolution was signed on when we originally developed the TIAs, because, again, it doesn't become a common methodology in a standardized format if there's no mechanism to require the use.
I kind of recommend to everybody you pay close attention to this, because what you're doing is adding another bureaucratic level of review to economic development projects in your jurisdictions.
Somewhat. I mean, to be fair, there's always been a TIA requirement, so we're not adding a requirement. We're making sure that that is clear and standard across our planning area so that people aren't doing it differently each time they're reviewing development. You're not starting that process with a clean slate and open negotiation. It starts with a base, and then from there you negotiate or decide what sort of changes to that format you're going to use.
And once we have the actual documents to look at, I mean, right now we're having a conceptual conversation, but once we have the documents, we can make sure that our technical staffs are looking at this to make sure it's something that's not overly burdensome, you know, particularly on our small cities.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we've discussed that as a part of this process. If there are, when we first started, we started with a survey of, you know, how effective has this been, what kind of issues have you run into, and we've emphasized, if, like you just mentioned, especially with smaller communities where we get staff turnover, if training is an issue, let us know so that we can be sure to make accommodations for that. If, and for VOTRAN, I think it's been the bigger concern that we've discussed, because they will have more TIAs to review. If that's going to be a staffing issue, obviously we fund a transit planner. Do we need to get them more involved in this to provide support? Or do we need to somehow recognize that through you all? So we have tried to be sensitive to that, certainly.
Any other questions? Yeah, I think it's important to be sensitive to our smaller communities out there, because a lot of times they just don't have the resources to compete competitively on a lot of these contracts. So,
even our larger communities don't always have the resources.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
staff
true.
Are spread thin, and we do recognize that.
Next act, presentation and discussion of the draft findings for the U.S. 1792 Corridor Improvement Program. Is that you, Lois? Or?
Well, I'm going to just give a brief introduction. To Mr. Bob Wallace, who's here from Tyndall Oliver and Associates. They've been working on this project, and of course we did a phase one, and now we're moving on to becoming a little more specific in phase two, and eventually leading to very specific projects. That's not Bob.
No. Thank you, Liz. Chris Keller with Tyndall Oliver. As mentioned, so the US 17 corridor study. What we're looking at is the US 1792 from county line to county line, so a 41-mile-long corridor. As sort of mentioned, we're looking to how can you improve mobility for all users and increase safety within this corridor. There was a phase one, which primarily was a data collection effort. What we're really trying to do is build on that effort and come up with some implementable recommendations, projects that, as I mentioned, relate to that increasing and enhancing mobility and safety throughout the corridor. One of the things that we started off doing was to sort of dust off the data collection efforts of phase one, do a baseline condition review. We looked at existing traffic, roadway designations, projected traffic. What are the typical sections? What does the cross-sections of the corridor look like? They vary as you move along the corridor. We want to sort of note that and recognize that. We looked at transit service. What transit routes are out there? Where are the stops located? What is the ridership at the stops? Where are your higher stop-level ridership areas along the corridor? Where might there be more of a need to focus on transit activity and transit recommendations? We looked at the existing multimodal networks, sidewalks, bike lanes, for one, to see where things are, but also to see where there might be missing links within the corridor. We looked at safety in the crash history. We looked at total crashes. We looked at the types of crashes that are making up the crashes. Where are those crashes occurring? Sort of, the trends over time. Are crashes going up? Are they staying the same? Or are they decreasing? And like I said, we broke into, sort of the some details of some different crash types. We looked at severe injury crashes, bike peg crashes, angle left turn crashes. We wanted to know where these were so we could focus our efforts coming up with recommendations. We also did a land use evaluation. We looked at existing land uses, future land uses. Where are those changing? Where might there be more intense development along the corridor? Where are their existing plans? DeBerry has a TOD plan that they're working on. Orange City has a CRA, downtown DeLand. We wanted to recognize existing plans within the study area. And we also looked at, where's future growth? Where might there be areas that may not have a lot of intense residential employment today that might in the future? So we took all that information and we developed what we call our corridor character districts. Phase one took the corridor and divided it into 19 segments based off of the physical characteristics of the roadway. We wanted to sort of incorporate some more of characteristics beyond the right-of-way lines of the roadway. How does land use play? How does the feel of the corridor play? We came up with 6 different districts along the corridor. A rural district, a rural town district, a transitioning district, which really reflects the efforts down in the DeBerry area, a suburban, urban, and a traditional urban, which really is downtown DeLand. And we're also in the process of developing a evaluation criteria for our project recommendations. This is really a high-level planning sort of evaluation. Does it make sense? But we also wanted to test, how well do these recommendations do on certain different measures? How well do they improve safety? How well do they increase connectivity? Do they support plans? Do they support the future density of the area? And then how easy are they to implement? How much might they cost? What is the level of effort needed to really push them through? And then what we're doing next is, like I said, I keep mentioning our project recommendations. Really, that's sort of the meat and potatoes of what we're trying to do here. Since this is a multimodal corridor study, a lot of our effort is going to be focused on trying to identify bicycle and pedestrian multimodal type connections and enhancements along the corridor. We will be looking at some geometric improvements. Is there some intersection operational improvements that we could do? And then any sort of transit-related improvements, including mostly focusing on sort of bus stop level strategy improvements. And with that, if you have any questions.
Do we have any questions? Commissioner Saylor?
When is your estimated completion with your recommendations going to be seen?
We are on a time frame to have them wrapped up by May. So we're in the process of developing those right now. There is a public workshop. I believe it is scheduled for the 7th of April. Am I right? April 5th, sorry. April 5th, where we'll sort of be going through some details of our corridor character districts, our evaluation process, and highlighting some of our initial recommendations and ideas in that.
By the way, that's in the training room at the County Administration Center in Des Moines.
Yes.
But May is when we can expect to start seeing what you're recommending from the study.
Yes, we'll start coming out with our draft list probably within the next month.
Okay, I think Lee's going to ask the other question I had, so.
No, go ahead.
17 through DeLand is one thing, but the truck route going around is another. Is that not included in this?
We're the quote unquote, or basically the bypass, the 15A, that's included within our corridor study area. We sort of recognize that and recognize what that has done and allowed for some changes through DeLand. Most of our focus is going to be directly on 17 or 1792, but we do have a range that we can look at. Additional recommendations and potential improvements.
The big reason that sticks out to us from Orange City is the fact that everybody in Orange City says we should be able to do what DeLand's doing. Well, we can't.
Yeah.
and your study's going to affect us in the long run. By 2020, I see major changes that's going to happen someplace.
Commissioner Matusik?
And you know, our downtowns, you know, are certainly different. I mean, DeLand's constraint, there's no way you can widen the road or do anything in downtown DeLand without taking down buildings, where you've got the four-lane and the bidirectional turn lane through the center, which puts your buildings back further. So the whole corridor is kind of unique in that area, because we've got the only segment that's two lanes, you know, through that area until after you get to 17, after you get through DeLand Springs, where it goes back to two lanes, which I think they're working on four-laning that segment and putting the trail in through there. So I just want to make sure, too, that we are looking at those connections to the trail that's going in on the north side of DeLand Springs up to 40. I think it's important to look at that corridor from the north part of DeLand into DeLand Springs, and looking at some sort of a trail that would connect on that Highway 17 piece, because that, and we'll talk about it later, the St. John's River to Sea Loop going on up into Putnam County is going through that corridor as well. Right now, they can get there, but we ended up busing once we get to Wallatka, because we can't get to Palatka. So, you know, those are some things that really need to be looked at, and how the heart of Florida is going to connect on 40 back into 17, which is the St. John's River to Sea Loop. So we're looking at a whole system up there in that northern corridor. So I want to make sure that is looked at, and the connection from the south end of 1792 on in as well, on the pieces that we can't get to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also a corridor connection out to SunRail in DeLand. Even though it's off the 17 piece, that connection's going to be critical on 17 out to SunRail.
Commissioner Matusik, are you going to be at the meeting, or?
Yes.
Okay, so please bring that up over there. Chair Davis, you recognize?
Thank you, sir. So basically, if I understand this correctly, the data is showing that we need to four-lane 17 pretty much all the way from border to border, minimal four-laning it, correct?
I wouldn't necessarily say that, and that's not necessarily what we're looking at. There is a existing project within the work plan, four-lane part of 17, north of
DeLand Springs. Yeah,
but we're not. Basically, we're taking the existing work program and plan projects and assuming those to be sort of the typical section moving forward. We don't anticipate our study recommending any widening within the corridor. It's more, if there is any sort of capacity, it might be looking at some intersection stuff, turn lanes, but we're not. We're looking more, how can we make enhancements within the existing sort of cross sections or planned sort of funded sections of the 17 corridor?
Well, because I bring this up because constantly getting conversation from citizens of Volusia County saying, when are they going to four-lane 17 north of DeLand Springs? Because it's actually quite heavily traveled. And it gets bottlenecked up there, and then we go from a four-lane in DeLand Springs to a two-lane, and it goes all the way out to the end of the county. So it creates a little bit of a problem there by the school. So I was just curious as if that was in your plans, or maybe we could look at that later.
Again, I mean, we recognize the existing work program plan to widen north of there. I believe that goes up to 40. But beyond that, we're looking at the existing two-lane section north of there, and what can we do within that sort of cross-section.
I do think it's important that everything north of DeLand Springs, which is part of my council district up to the Putnam County line, that we are going to get the word out of this meeting in DeLand, and I'll make sure that the Pearson council knows about it, to get them, see they could have somebody, maybe Commissioner Mayor Sowell could be there, maybe the Chair Davis and myself could be at that meeting. Okay. Ms. Gregg?
Yes.
as chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee, we talked to Tyndall Oliver at our meeting. And to clarify for our council member, the four laning is only going to 40. After 40, it's going to stay the two lanes. Plans are to build a sidewalk because the elementary school is going to be moved over on the same side as the high school. Now, they're going to leave it two lanes, and that heavy intersection at the schools is going to be looked at for safety reasons and crossing. I have asked for a study or some results coming back from widening 17 all the way to the county line. And I have been told that there are no real plans to do that in the near future. And I don't know, Jean, do you have anything to do with that study of widening that road? Or is that a county road?
Are you referring to the section of 17 north of 40?
Yes.
We rely on the MPO's long-range transportation plan as a basis for what we choose, and priority list, of course, that comes from it, as a basis for where the department invests its resources. For right now, that does not seem to have made the list that we call the cost-feasible list. It's also noted as such in the long-range transportation plan. Once that happens, we can begin the multi-stage process of looking into it. Those sorts of projects require what are called logical termini. So we cannot end a project at a county line. It would need to find a more comfortable touchdown point, probably another state highway. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that for the commissioners.
Thank you. Commissioner Mutu, second.
I know that there's been talk for several years on the widening of 17 through Pearson and Seville, and a lot of that came about because of the distribution center, the Walmart distribution center in Putnam, and the trucks that would come down to 40 and split to go 40 north or continue down 40 east to 90 to 95. It can take 40 to 75 through Lake County. Does anybody or has anybody heard any more, you know, of that project?
It's pretty much dead.
Because I know they still have the property there. I just didn't know if there was any rumor of it regenerating. Yeah, the Walmart distribution center up there in Putnam.
No.
Just past the Volusia line.
Yeah. Yeah, Lois.
I just thank you for giving me the opportunity. I want to fill in a little bit of the gaps that are here. You know, when we're talking about over 40 miles of highway, there's a lot to discuss, and certainly this changes, as Chris noted, in its character as it moves along from Putnam down to the Seminole County line. The northern section had what they called pre-PD&E, because we did include this on our priority list several years ago, and prior to justifying a full PD&E, which cost several million dollars, the DOT did a pre-PD&E study, and they determined that the timing just wasn't right for doing a PD&E on this project, that in all likelihood it would reveal or end up with a no-build scenario. So there had been a PD&E on widening State Road 40 to the west as well, and it ended up with a no-build scenario. And so I think there's recognition that over time traffic will grow, but the timing for evaluating that just hasn't arrived yet. Again, as Chris mentioned and as you all know, there is a widening project already moving through the work program. Right now it's just right-of-way being funded to widen up to State Road 40. And that will include a multi-use trail. There have been concerns expressed by the city of Pearson, the town of Pearson, especially around the Washington Avenue area. As we all know, when you're on a wide open, whether it's two-lane or four-lane, a wide open area without a lot of development and what they call side friction, you get comfortable driving pretty fast, and it becomes very difficult to adjust your speed limit when you get to a small town. So Pearson has expressed some concern, and we have talked to DOT about doing some type of a safety study. Initial review of crashes don't seem to indicate an issue, as well as speeding, which is ends up being a law enforcement issue. There will be an evaluation around the school, of course, and I've talked to both Sarah Lee Morrissey from the schools as well as staff from DOT. The timing on that is not certain, but the construction of the school is still a little ways off, although it's been accelerated dramatically. But they will, as a matter of course, look at safe turn lanes and crosswalks and those sorts of things, because we know that many, 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 many parents will want to drop off and pick up their school kids. But in that area, there's likely to be a high walking population that we need to account for. And, of course, we've been talking about, do we build a trail, a sidewalk, or a path? And that's still been negotiated depending on to get from Pearson at Washington Avenue up to the school. Because, of course, somebody has to agree to maintain that and who's going to pay for building it. So and whether there's right-of-way. So that's still being vetted, but we are wrapping up a feasibility study on that, putting that decision to rest and moving forward with funding a project. So there's a lot happening up in that area. Moving further to the south, we do recognize, of course, that the corridor is policy constrained in most areas. And so the whole impetus for this was conversations with DeLand, Orange City, and DeBerry about, well, we still have some areas that need to be improved and changed. So this is an attempt to identify specifically what those improvements might look like so that they can turn around and submit projects either for the bicycle, pedestrian, or the traffic operations priority list and start moving forward with those smaller scale projects. The last item is just a reminder that in the long-range plan, we do have improvements in the cost-feasible section for that southern section of 15A where it connects to 1792 down through 472, recognizing that there is a lot of congestion in that area. There's some traffic and turning movement issues. We don't know what the solution is, but certainly FDOT recognizes we need to take a closer look at that and decide what sort of improvements can help. A traditional widening isn't going to happen. It's six lanes in that area. Mm-hmm. But there are probably some intersection and ramp changes that can occur or turn lane changes that can occur to make that reduce the congestion and the bottleneck. So those are kind of the major things that are happening, some of which are coming out of this study and some of which have already occurred.
So the possibility of an overpass from Dirksen all the way up to De Leon Springs, four lanes, is not going to make it.
So, flyover is not.
Thank you. A flyover. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a presentation discussion on the data elements of the congestion management plan review.
Good morning, Bob Keith, CPO staff. We have, since the 1990s, had a congestion management process in place. It is essentially a performance-based, outcome-focused process for identifying where congestion is occurring and developing projects that would address that for a positive outcome, of course, reduction of congestion. In 2012, with the adoption or the enactment of the MAP 21 federal transportation legislation, the focus was broadened a bit to include more performance-related management items. These would include, of course, multimodal considerations, transit, bike, ped, as well as auto and other modes. But it also looked at system reliability, safety and efficiency, and level of maintenance as well. So in response, when we updated our long-range plan recently, we took a look at our congestion management process and developed a new document which set a framework for a refined congestion management process, and this was adopted as a standalone document. We, the staff, have taken that document and developed specific performance measures that reflect the direction provided by that document. And we've identified the data sources and the actual measurements necessary to develop those measures. And we've reviewed these with the Congestion Management Technical Working Group and are further refining that now to develop a report which carries out the intent of what was adopted in that congestion management process. Included in your agenda packet is a matrix which presents the specific measures and calculations which we've identified, also the data sources. These, of course, will be incorporated into that report, which we'll review with the working group over the next few weeks and with the advisory committees, and finally bring it to your attention for your review and approval. This is going to be an annual event. We will bring an updated report to you annually, and this is intended to identify where we have issues, where we're making progress, and guide your decision-making regarding where we should be spending our funds and what types of projects we should be emphasizing. It's, of course, aimed at making the planning process more effective and again, more outcome-oriented. I'll not go through the specific requirement or measurements with you, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Chief.
You.
Item D, presentation discussion on the 2016 Tell the TPO survey campaign. This is a big whoop.
That's right. We're excited to bring this back again. Just a reminder, we did this 2 years ago, and you know the point of this not only is to get information, but it's also to get our name out there and to make sure that people know, at least some people, know that we exist. In 2014, we had over 1,200 responses, and what was really beneficial about that, not only was that we reached 1,200 people, 300 of those people got added to our, wanted to get added to our mailing database, and 218 wanted to get added to VOTRAN's database. So again, it was good for us, as well as VOTRAN, as well as the Rethink rideshare program, good for us in terms of partnering, as well as in increasing interest, at least to some degree, in folks wanting transportation information that might be valuable. So I have Adam Bergdahl from Kittleson. He was involved in the last survey, and he is back again to help us out this time.
Thank you, Lois. It's hard to believe it has been 2 years, but we're back again. So I'm assuming that everybody in this room was able to actually fill out a survey 2 years ago. Is that true?
Yes.
Who didn't? All right, we've got one extra response. So we'll go from 1,263 to 1,264 at least.
Adam, don't press your luck here.
But everybody should remember that it was a fun campaign 2 years ago, and I'll kind of give you a little background about the survey from 2 years ago and then how we're going to kind of change it up a little bit this year and as we roll it out. So as a reminder, Lois kind of gave a pretty good segue, but the purpose of the Tell the TPO is kind of double-edged. It was not only a survey where we could research public opinion and engage the public, but it was also a public awareness campaign. At the time, 2 years ago, the Volusia TPO was going through the reapportionment process to become the River to Sea TPO and welcome in portions of Flagler County and Palm Coast. So it was a great opportunity to introduce the TPO and what it does to a new set of people who might not be familiar. It helped to create a buzz and earn media opportunity. Lois was on the radio, on Big John's radio show, and then, you know, there were numerous events. It also allowed us to build partnerships and then increase the databases that we have as a TPO, and then also, you know, Rethink and VOTRAN, it increased everybody's database. Everybody wanted to know about these the events or the transportation topics that are going on with the TPO. The overall approach of the survey is and was to target everybody. We wanted everybody that live, works, or plays within the TPO region. We wanted to maximize the response rate. We were really looking to make this be one of the most the most successful surveys within the state of Florida. And actually, we did fairly well, 1,263 responses. That actually dwarfed the Broward MPO long-range plan survey effort in, from a response perspective, by about 200 to 300 responses. Big success in a much smaller population area. We also wanted to, you know, maximize exposure to transportation issues. You know, that's kind of twofold. You know, let our constituents understand what topics that the TPO is interested in and has some impact on, and then also ascertain their perception of transportation. And then, you know, finally, it was a fun event. You know, we were able to really just kind of market the TPO and build a new, you know, the new connections and new outreach, new people to outreach with. Just kind of a flashing back to the 2014 survey, it was primarily an online platform, tellthetpo.com. We have the same URL that we'll be using this year. The survey will look very similar, branded with the River to Sea TPO branding scheme. Looking back, we kind of covered a lot of this, but we ended up working with organizations like Rethink, all the chambers of commerce within Volusia and Flagler counties within the planning area. One Voice for Volusia was a great way to outreach and engage 50 different nonprofits that serving the underserved communities. And it was also an opportunity to kind of roll out with a pretty good social media blitz, which we'll build upon this year. Pictured on the right here is a rack card, what we call it. It's just a little card that can be put into, you know, the front entryways of all of your offices, you know, in bus kiosks where you have the schedules and that type of thing. And so this was just another way to get some media out there and increase exposure. And we offered a $250 prize to anybody who was willing to provide their name and email address. And it was selected based on a random drawing, and we were able to present that check. Actually, it was a gift card. It'll be a little bit different this year, but still, we do have a prize at the end of the tunnel. So I'm not going to go into the details of the 2014 survey, but it was a very concise survey summary that we put together. It's about 4 pages, 11 by 17, folded in half, a brochure that has everything. It's available on the TPO's website. So as we roll ahead with this survey, the intent of the 2014 survey was to basically kind of establish a baseline. This is going to be a periodic survey every other year where we can identify transportation trends and compare to that baseline and see how people's opinions are changing. We did have one new question that was added to the survey, and that was related to ITS funding. The ITS Intelligent Transportation System, as you all know, was the topic of this year's board retreat. And so we wanted to put in a question regarding kind of what areas of ITS should we maybe think about more so than others. It's kind of a way to kind of rank the public's perception there. And then also we added a response to an existing question where you have an ITS kind of response to question 3, which everybody should have a handout, I hope, with that. And then we just made very few minor wording and text clarifications for text changes for clarifications. The reason for that is we want the survey to be the same as it was, so that we can monitor. We don't want to change the meaning of any of the questions, so that we can identify those trends from year to year. Oops, there we go. Okay, so the marketing plan moving forward is very similar to what it was last time. We're going to team with the chambers to reach their member businesses. We're going to team with the businesses to reach their employees. It's kind of a pyramid. We want to start with a few touch points organizations that have access to numerous people. We want to team with many organizations. You guys are all members, active members of several organizations that we could not possibly reach out to all. We're hoping that you can help us spread the word. We're going to engage, we want to engage this board and then the other committees as champions to move forward as ambassadors. We'll go into that here in the next slide, but more importantly, we want to keep it fun. So this year, we'll have prizes and incentives. The prize for anybody that takes the survey this year will be an iPad mini, opportunity to win a free iPad mini. We also get an exchange, we get their email address. That helps to build our database as well. And then we're going to roll out with a friendly challenge. And so 2 years ago, what we did is we engaged everybody as part of this board individually We gave everybody a unique web address that they could post to their city or county's website, and they could click on it, they could share it via social media, and it would actually, that would be unique to each individual member. We would be able to track which members generated the most responses. Vice Mayor Jason DeLorenzo, he hit something really well and ended up generating the most responses and was able to win this lovely, coveted trophy. So he's been nice enough to get it back to us so that we can use it again. So it was on an individual basis. But this time we're going to roll it out. We want to generate different kind of levels of response. So we've challenged the TDLCB, the BPAC, the CAC, and the TCC, and we're challenging you now, where all the boards and committees will compete as a group together against each other. So we have five different competitors, and the trophy will be presented to the chair at the end of the chair of the respective board or committee at the very end of the survey to be forever enshrined within probably this room or somewhere within this building with a picture and the trophy. You get your name on the trophy and everything. It seems kind of silly, I guess, to some extent. You know, we've got this beautiful trophy, but it's really important to point out that a third of our responses came through that ambassador program last time. You know, I'd like to increase that even more this time. So it's a really successful way. So what we plan to do is, with this friendly challenge, we are rolling out the survey a week from tomorrow, on March 31st. On March 31st, we'll email everybody, every committee member, every board member, an email with the unique link that you'll have. I would recommend taking that link and forwarding it to your IT groups to get it put onto your website, wherever you can. Copy and paste that link into your Facebook post as many times as you can. And that unique link will let us know, you know, who's generating the most responses. So there'll be an email coming from Pam to all the board members, and we'll, you know, have multiple social media blasts as well. The survey will run from the 31st all the way through the end of May, and then we'll June compile and analyze the data, compare back to the previous study, and summarize it, and come back to you later this summer to present the results. So with that, are there any questions?
Any questions, members? Thank you very much. You know, it's as Lois says, you know, getting the TPO out there. I had somebody say to me that they'd heard from others that our meetings tend to be a little boring. I came up with a suggestion to myself, that I thought twice about. I thought maybe we could take any competing engineering companies, because, you know, as one ad used to say, tires aren't pretty, so transportation ain't sexy unless you're an engineer. So I thought maybe we could put some Visqueen out here in the middle and have a Wesson Oil wrestling match and let the engineers, and then that who gets the contracts. But I figured that Lois was going to tell me that the feds and the state would probably not approve, and the Wesson Oil 50-gallon drum and the Visqueen were probably not in our budget. So we'll have to do with the TPO. Tell the TPO. So thank you for being here today.
You had a beautiful trophy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, the trophy, yes.
Are you asking for donations, Mr. Patterson?
No, no. Mr. Ferguson, you are up.
Thank you,
Mr. moving Chairman. Target of FDOT here.
Yes, that's correct. I just want to let everybone to know that the I-4 widening project is currently on track to wrap up later this winter. Also, the system interchange project remains on track to be completed in spring of 2018. Moving on, we've got the 415 project from Seminole County Line to Reed Ellis. We've got about 2 more months left to wrap that one up, so that should be getting done fairly shortly as well. Beyond that, that's pretty much just landscaping and resurfacing projects. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Chair Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, sir. Mr. Ferguson, just a kind of a weird personal question here. The bridge that's going over 95 over by the flea market, is that which one is that?
Bellevue.
Bevel. Yeah. No. That was open during bike week. It was open during the racetrack. Race weeks, was it not?
Right. We were coordinating with those two events.
Mm-hmm. So it should be open soon, because that's just a question I have. You know, I've got a couple friends who are asking about that, too.
I'm not exactly sure of the status of that project. I do know that that part of it had its fits and starts.
Mid-April.
It looks like roughly a mid-April opening for that structure.
Okay, yeah, because that is a major, believe it or not, I see it, that's a major traffic congestion reliever. Just that little bit of spur goes over to Bevel Road and goes down. Because I'll tell you, I usually come that way when I go into Daytona, but now that I have to go down 92 for a while, it gets a little tight sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right, thank you. I will pass that along.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you very much. You're going to look into the issue I brought up, right, Mr. Ferguson?
Sure, if you'd like to.
I've had some comments regarding safety issues, and it looks like lately here, and I think it might be related to the holidays, there's been quite a few accidents out on I-95 and I-4 around that. So if we can look at it. I've seen some tremendous traffic, like 2.5 miles long on International Speedway with people coming off 95 to drive all the way to Kepler Road and out in that area. So if you could just check, it may just be an anomaly,
Those crashes wound up being basically human error, driver error on them. There's not a lot we could have done to re-engineer them, but we always look into every one of those incidents and try to find every opportunity we can to improve safety.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me it was just the Yankees trying to get back up north and as fast as possible, so I guess you have to put up with that. So. All right. Lois, do you have a report here for us?
Yes, thank you. Just a quick update on the connector study between I-95 and State Road 417 in southeast Volusia. The Florida's Turnpike is bringing a consultant on board. They finalized that process, and they're executing contracts right now. They plan to set up a meeting, basically a scoping or intake meeting, in either late May or early June, where we'll be sitting down and talking about the scope and schedule of that study. Again, that is primarily looking at the environmental issues that would be associated, which are probably some of the bigger hurdles, because for those of you that have been here, the Turnpike staff came and gave a presentation on sort of a high-level, they call it a sketch study, that evaluated volume, traffic volume or demand, as well as costs, and recognized there's still a big gap between those two. So again, what we decided and this board directed is to move forward at least with starting to look at the environmental issues associated with a project like this and nailing down a more specific alignment. So I'll be able to come back probably after our summer break and let you know what the schedule of that project will look like. On an associated or related note, that is funded through an old earmark, and some of you may have been made aware that there is an effort at the federal level to wipe the slate clean on all of the old earmarks. And it hasn't been decided how that's going to happen, but what seems to be the most popular thought is that each state would get to retain those earmarks at the state level and decide what to do with that money. In the state of Florida, there's roughly 31 million in old earmarks that would be made available. On a state level, 31 million, I hate to dismiss that as not being a lot of money, but at the state level, that's not a lot of money. Nonetheless, that is still being discussed and negotiated, and you can imagine there's lots of folks providing their input on what to do with that. This particular project had been on a list that was distributed, but I can tell you it is in the budget and the work program
for FY17 that begins on July 1st. So that money has already been obligated and is already in an approved budget. So unless the governor decided to line item veto it, it will move forward. Just a reminder that we have the call for projects underway. We have a deadline coming up at the beginning of April. We've been working with a lot of your staff on helping them develop the project applications. That, because we do have some changes there, because we do have a new long-range plan, we will see changes to almost all of our lists, certainly, that may be pretty significant. So if there's anything unusual after the deadline, any projects that are unusual that come in, we'll be bringing those through our committees and the board for discussion. Again, on a related note to that, we had presentations today on transportation impact analysis, transit design guidelines, congestion management, US 1792. Have a lot of studies that are underway but wrapping up, and that we are intentionally trying to wrap up before the end of the fiscal year, again, because of the change in funding agreements that we're going to have to go through. We've got the priority process, the call for projects. We have our work program that has to come back and still be reviewed, and then projects that DOT is working on, like the Volusia Connector study. So we've got a lot of activity in the next few months. Our agendas are likely to be somewhat lengthy. So, again, I would ask any of you that have questions about these projects as we release the draft reports for folks to review, please don't hesitate to give me a call, rely on your staff, or do whatever makes you feel comfortable to become more comfortable with them. We try not to bring projects or documents that are large forward without ample opportunity to review the content. So, again, please feel free to take the time or ask questions that you might have. Update on Sun Trails. This is the statewide interconnected trail system that runs across the state. We're primarily familiar with the coast to coast because that's been a huge effort in this area, and it is the first tier system that has been prioritized. And Sun Trails, of course, has $25 million set aside each year now here in the state, in addition to transportation alternative funding or local funding that might also support trails. The Florida Greenway and Trails Foundation will be meeting on March 31st, and they have been meeting to discuss what's going to be the next trail system that is prioritized, and the department has asked for them to go ahead and identify those. They're looking at 7 different systems throughout the state, and I can provide that list, but certainly in this area, that would include the St. John's River to Sea Loop and the Heart of Florida Loop. The Heart of Florida Loop, in our area, everything on the west side of the county is funded. The only piece that would remain is State Road 40 West. And there is a PD&E that's going to occur to look at that. Of course, the St. John's River to Sea Loop pretty much encompasses all of the regional trail system that we have on the statewide system in this area. That's been a priority for this MPO for a number of years, and we have signed on to, as well as all the counties, the 5 counties that are involved in that, signed on to an MOU. MOA, agreeing to promote and support the development of that trail system. So that being said, the Volusia County Council has provided a letter of support, as have a number of local agencies. We have in the past supported resolutions for this particular project. But it might be appropriate at this point to send a more current letter of support acknowledging that this has been a priority for this TPO as they continue to review these 7 systems.
Commissioner Matusek, you want to make that motion?
Yeah, I have a comment before the motion. Pat Northey's been working hard, as well as I have, to get letters, you know, get letters of support for the River to Sea Loop. What's important, too, with the River to Sea Loop is Bike Florida has done over 15 guided tours with anywhere from 15 to 25 people on bicycles doing that tour. And in portions of it, we have to actually put people back in vehicles, transport the bikes to get them to pick up that next piece. So it would be great for that all to be done. And it's not just Volusia, it's Flagler, too. It comes down the coast into the west side and then back up to Putnam County. I know Congressman Micah has submitted a letter as well as Representative Santiago has sent a letter. The East Central Florida Regional Planning Council sent a letter of support. The chambers have, you know, supported it, and I just think it's really important to our area. But I also think the Heart of Florida Trail, and Mike, you might want to talk about that also, is important because that piece on 40 that's missing will actually connect the St. John's River to Sea Loop and the Heart of Florida, giving people more of an option to go in those directions or to even get over to the East Coast for us if they want to go to, you know, to the beach and back. I think it's important for our area, Volusia, Flagler, Lake, and Sumter to have a connecting trail system. So, I mean, I would like to see us send a letter of support for the St. John's River to Sea Loop, explaining the economic benefits and all to Volusia Flagler, and maybe also a separate letter of support for the Heart of Florida as well. I'm not sure combining them would do as much of an impact as two different letters, and I would certainly ask my colleagues on the other side of the river at Lake Sumter for their support of doing the same thing for the St. John's River to Sea Loop and us be a united front, because I think if we could show the connection of both of those, I think it would be a bigger bang for our buck.
So do you want to make a motion?
I think Mike has a comment first. And then
is it related to?
Yes.
You recognize me.
Commissioner Mike Woods.
I know you don't look anything like Vernon Burton.
Vice Mayor Burton, since his regrets, he couldn't be here today. The seven trails that Lois mentioned that the Florida Greenways and Trails Council is going to prioritize next Thursday, we're competing with three larger urbanized areas, Jacksonville, Tampa, and Miami area. And politically, I think there's going to be a lot of momentum to give this next coast-to-coast type trail to one of these larger urbanized areas. So I think it's very important what Lee talked about is our Heart of Florida Trail is probably 70% complete right now. The trail in Miami area, the East Coast Greenway, a section of that, that's probably a 10 to 12, maybe 15-year project. And so as a state, if we're not completing another big regional trail within the next few years, I think momentum for that $25 million a year might go away. So I think we have a strong case, and that's part of the criteria the council's reviewing is, can this big regional trail be completed or at least programmed within the next 5 years? And we've got an opportunity here with the Heart of Florida because of prior work, and you know, the coast to coast is the southern leg of the Heart of Florida, and the Withacoochee State Trails is the western leg, and the Spring to Spring Trail in Volusia is the eastern leg. There's been a lot of state and federal and local dollars committed to make this project move forward. And the Spring to Spring is also part of the St. John's River Sea Loop. And so strategically, I think this TPO should probably support both trails. And so I would support Lee in that motion.
We want to do two motions on this? Two different letters, or just include it in one?
I think we can include it, you know, in one. I think Lois, you know, probably understands the direction. But, you know, I make a motion to send a letter of support for the St. John's River to Sea Loop and the benefits to Volusia Flagler, you know, with that, and also a separate letter of support for the Heart of Florida that takes in the St. John's River to Sea Loop as well.
Sure.
So that's two letters.
Correct.
Okay. Let's do one letter at a time, okay?
Okay.
We'll make the motion again for just the one letter, please.
I make a motion for a letter for the St. John's River to Sea Loop support to DEP.
Is there a second?
A second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any debate? Motion and a second for a letter on the St. What was that? St.
St. John's River to Sea, TPA.
Yeah. Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, so the motion passes. Sir, do you want to make a second motion?
Sure. I'd bring forth a motion to have the TPO support the Heart of Florida Loop Trail as a priority for the Florida Gubbies and Trails Council.
Second.
We have a motion for a letter on the Heart of Florida Trail. Then a second?
Second.
There's a second. Any debate? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, show the motion passes.
And Mike, would you take that back to, I know your board probably doesn't meet before that, but maybe TJ can get with the chair and send a letter of support as well for the Volusia, for the St. John's River Sea Loop.
Sure. For the rest of the commission, in my daytime job, I work for the Lake Sumter MPO.
Okay. Thank you for the disclosure.
Kind of double dipping there, ain't you?
I'm on vacation for this meeting.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Lois. Any members have anything relating to transportation they want to bring up? Members? Okay. We have several information items.
Mr. Chair.
Lois. Mr. Conroy. Mr. Conroy.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Chair, I just have a couple questions to you or to Lois. Back in the start of our fiscal year, the executive board approved a contract with Lois, and specifically you negotiated with her. It was a salary increase, correct?
Correct.
Who would be under the authority about staff who I could ask what increase did they get this year? Would it be us or would it be the director?
Lois?
Yeah. Each year we go through a budget process, and we'll be meeting after this meeting to discuss next year's budget. The staff increases for this year, I believe, included an average increase. So there's a budgeted number to be distributed based on merit. And I believe that was 3% for three of our staff. But I'll have to double check. It's not familiar in my head.
So what did they receive last year? They're on a merit system. So some people get some people don't get any?
Correct. The year before it was basically the same amount, which is a portion for staff.
In that, I can sit in that meeting next, in your budget meeting?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The budget meeting will be held. We will not be taking any action because we do not have a quorum, but we're just going to go over the budget, and then when we do have a quorum to the budget committee to pass it and bring it forward.
And just another question either to the chair or to you, Lois, and who came up with the merit system? How was that process done? Who decided on that?
That is a discussion that occurs at the budget subcommittee each year.
Okay. I just like to see, you know, your success and the great work you do, I know, is augmented by your staff. And I'd like to see everybody get at least some kind of increase every year because that's, you know, they work hard, everybody works hard. And I just, that's all my comments. I like to see somebody get something.
Okay, thank you. Any other member comments? All right. And we have the information items. And since there's no other business to come before us, we are adjourned. Thank you. Next meeting.